Hello and welcome to A Hurler's Life with me, Brian Carroll. In this podcast, we chat with former greats of the game about their hurling lives. From the best manager they played under, to the one win that means the most to them. In every show, the guests will reveal the best six they ever hurled with. One of the greatest players to ever grace our game joins me this week. DJ Carey from the Young Ireland's club in Gorn was the winner of a staggering 10 Leinster titles, 4 National Hurling Leagues and 5 All-Irelands with Kilkenny. He was also honoured with 9 All-Stars and was named Texaco Hurler of the Year on 2 occasions in 1993 and in 2000. He also won 2 county titles with his club in Ireland and multiple handball All-Irelands. This is Hurler's Life with none other than DJ Carey. A Hurler's Life is proudly sponsored by Golan Bake. Golan Bake is the home of the jambon, and you can buy their products in the supermarket freezer aisle to bake at home. Their range includes the nation's favourite, the ham and cheese jambon, as well as their new pepperoni pizza jambon and chicken fajita jambon flavours. Hurling and jambons, only in Ireland.
DJ, look, you're very welcome to the show. Massive honour for me personally. I spent my whole childhood looking up to you, and I even have a picture here hanging on a home here in front of me when you presented under 12 county medals back to us here in 1993. So not alone for me, but you were a huge fan favourite for people around the country. And I think this was probably most evident when you retired for that short period in 1998. By all accounts, you received 25,000 letters. Is that true?
Yeah, near enough to it anyway, Brian. Yeah. So I don't know why, to be honest, I got so many, but a lot of them came in, and even going back at now, I can't remember, but a lot of them were, all of them, I'd say, were very nice. I didn't get to respond to too many, but they were well wishers and things like that. So, yeah. The postman was coming with a fairly full bag every day anyway, that was sure.
God, yeah, as you said, like, next to impossible to respond to that, which, you know, I think that's understandable to people, but it was a short-lived retirement. It must have been a tough time for you, though.
It was, Brian, to be honest. Look, you know, people can make what they want out of it at the time, but, you know, I was running a business at the time, and I was under pressure, and you know, you were clocking off maybe on a Friday evening, worried about where you get money on Monday to meet a check or meet a few checks or have checks to go out in the post or whatever. And you know, you're playing an important match on Sunday. And then at that time, if Kilkenny didn't win, like we've great supporters, like everyone is great supporters. You're great supporters in Offaly, but they're absolutely brilliant when you're winning. And but it's, when you're not winning, you know, you can get a serious backlash. And I found myself on the wrong end of that a lot of times. So, you know, like you're saying to yourself, I don't get paid for this. I don't get anything. I'm getting nothing but a load of hassle, you know, and under pressure all the time. So at that time, I decided, you know what, I didn't want any more of it. And so that was obviously a lot of the pressure. And then, of course, there was a bit of pressure to come back and I probably made, you know, kind of a stupid decision maybe at the time, and maybe did regret it a bit afterwards. I probably shouldn't have done it, but, you know, it was done, and the short lived enough, and I came back anyway and had a bit of a career afterwards.
That's an understatement. When you came back, you won a further 3 All-Irelands, you know, you won another 3 All-Stars, you know, phenomenal return. But obviously, just going back to that for a second, like, hurling can be a huge release to people, and like we all understand it is only an amateur sport, but as you said, the pressure of actually playing for Kilkenny probably made this even tougher.
Yeah, well, you're in the public eye, Brian, so and with Kilkenny, I suppose, at hurling level at that, you know, at that time, you know, and we were coming up against brilliant Offaly teams, you were coming up against brilliant Wexford teams, or very, you know, very, very good teams at the time who, you know, Offaly won All-Irelands in 94, wasn't it, and
yeah.
98. Wexford won an All-Ireland in 96. You know, we had won All-Irelands in 92, 93. So a lot of the 90s were gone by Leinster-winning teams, whom at that time, if you were knocked out in the first round, you were gone. you know. Yeah. So there wasn't second chances. There was one chance. You know, so your whole year was based on that one chance. So, like, you know, so coming from Kilkenny, you know, a lot of expectancy and probably a lot of expectancy on myself. And you didn't play well every day either. But certainly, if you didn't play well and didn't win, I found it was, you know, the butt end of an awful lot. But in hindsight, what you realise afterwards is, you know, you're a bit paranoid because a lot of the criticism is actually, and a lot of this stupid talk is actually coming from people who are much closer to you in life than what you realise, you know. And it's the people who are outside of that, you know, have great admiration for people. You know, like, lots of people will have great admiration for Offaly hurlers in Kilkenny. I'm not saying they don't have them in Offaly, they do. You know, but you find that you would be more admired nearly outside your own county than you would inside.
Yeah, certainly. I definitely appreciate that point. And, you know, as you say, Kilkenny, it's obviously brings its own pressure. You came onto it at a very young age. You were after having a brilliant career with St. Kieran's. You'd made a lot of headlines as you were coming up through the ranks. So did you relish it? You clearly knew you were one of the best deep down, but did you relish that challenge, or like, as you said, did you feel the pressure in those early 90s?
No, I didn't feel much pressure in the early 90s because I was young and coming onto the team. And I suppose Kilkenny hadn't won in All-Ireland for a long time, but they were coming good, you know. We'd been beaten in the 91 All-Ireland. We won the National League of 1990, beaten in the 91 final, won in 92, 93, so future looked bright for Kilkenny at that stage. And then we got a couple of fair beatings by Offaly in 94 and 95, and then can't remember whether it was Offaly or Wexford beat us in 96, but definitely Wexford beat us along the way in 97. You know, so at that time, we were coming up against pretty good opposition. But of course, you relished the opposition. But, you know, like the way I was running a business, I had whatever, 15 or 20 people employed. And, you know, there was always a certain amount of pressure there. And you were getting that pressure from Sunday. That was happening on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday as well. You were trying to train. And as I say, it probably all came at once and on top. And I really had decided I wasn't going to play in the 98 season after 97, if you know what I mean. But it just only kind of became public when National Leagues and that started back.
When you did come back, had you a new lease of life, or did you continue to feel the pressure?
There was a certain amount of pressure, but we got to an All-Ireland. But whoever will remember 98 was not a good hurling year. As an Offaly person, it was a great hurling year in the end. But ourselves and Offaly played in a Leinster final. I'd say it was the worst Leinster hurling final of all time. I got two 21-yard frees. One I went for a goal, one I went for a pint and mishit it, and it went into the back of the net. You know, it was the time that Babs was critical of the Offaly players. There was a row in Offaly. It was a time when there was three All-Ireland semi-finals or two replays with Offaly and Clare. You know, it was one of those real strange hurling years in general anyway. Ourselves and Offaly, I think that was the first time that a beaten team along the way had actually ended up in an All-Ireland final and won it, you know. And I suppose in so many ways, it was probably the best team that won an All-Ireland at that time that was beaten along the way, if that makes sense. Because if it was Kilkenny or Tip or Cork or someone that were beaten in a Leinster semi-final or final and turned out and won it, it probably wouldn't have been great for the so-called backdoor system at the time. But the fact that Offaly, who were obviously brilliant in the 80s and 90s, but hadn't that many All-Irelands behind them, weren't a so-called traditional county, won it, it probably cemented the fact that every team deserves a second chance.
Certainly. Like, look, as you said, you lost the All-Ireland in 98, Cork pipped you by a pint in 99.
Yeah,
you know, going into that All-Ireland 2000, you know, you were facing the possibility that you were going to lose three All-Irelands in a row. That must have been huge motivation for you.
Well, it was, Brian, but it's something I don't fully understand. And maybe I'm naive, I don't know. Of course you're determined, but I don't think we were any more determined in 2000 than we were in 98. I don't think we were any more determined in 99 than we were in 2000. Do you know what I mean? You know, like, you bring a certain amount, but a lot of stuff has to go right for you on the day. You know, you're determined. Like, you always hear, oh, we were after a match, we weren't going to be beaten today. And, oh, we did this today. And, oh, we were going to stick our necks on the line and our legs in and our hands in, and no matter what got in the way. I won five All-Irelands, Brian. And I don't think, and by the way, I played nine finals, of which two or three of them I didn't score. I don't think there was ever a match or ever an All-Ireland or ever a game, other than maybe a challenge match, that I ever went out to with the same attitude, you know. So in 2000 against Offaly, we got a flyer of a start, you know. We got a couple of goals, maybe three goals in the first 20 minutes of that game. But other than that, that was going to be a nip and tuck game right to the bitter end. And everything, absolutely everything went right for us in that 2000 All-Ireland. But it wasn't necessarily down to our pure and savage determination. Some of it was just pure luck that went right for us. That, in actual fact, on other days we hadn't got that. I mean, in 99 was a miserable wet day. No problem with that. That was the same for both teams. But we were 4 points up, I think, with 9 or 10 minutes left in the game in a really, really miserable day, of which Cork scored 5 points to win. They got the last 5 points to beat us by one, you know. So, like, on other occasions, Kilkenny would have been traditionally known to close out that game, you know. So, like, that's, but from a determination point of view, of course, we were determined in 2000. We were determined in 2001 as well against Galway, and they wiped the floor with us physically as well as everything else.
Yeah, look, you mentioned, I think that's a very valid point, and you need a bit of luck. I just think of Niall Claffey, you know, going up to catch the ball falls out of his hand, and you're coming at pace, and the ball falls into you as you're bearing down in goal. Sometimes, you know, obviously you have to be in the right place at the right time, but it's still an element of luck.
Absolutely. And people say you make your own luck. Well, maybe, but you have to be lucky to make your own luck too, in the sense of, you know, being absolutely in the right place at the right time. Where the ball lands, where does it fall? Do you know what I mean? You go to a certain ball, you're looking for the perfect one. It goes in over your head. You know, the fullback or the cornerback might make a bit of a mess of it. All of a sudden, you're there. You know, but you're there because you should be there. It's as simple as that. That's the position you're supposed to be in. So a lot of it, you know, you work hard, you train hard, you work on the skills of the game, you run on the physical part of the game, you work on all of that. But ultimately, you need that little few things to go right for you on any given occasion. You know, and sometimes we were on the wrong end of heavy beatings. But on those, when you look back on games, and I very rarely look back on games that I was beaten in, but when you actually look back on games and you see what happened in that particular game, you're saying, that should have been an awful lot closer. But yet you might have been beaten by 7 or 8 points in the game.
I get you. Yeah, definitely. In terms of, look, obviously from my perspective, I'd have a huge interest in your views on Offaly, but, you know, you had some great battles down through the 90s. How did you feel about them, considering that they seemed to be a little bit of a thorn in your shoe?
Well, Offaly were kind of sickeners for us because they were different, you know. They were just class, you know. They had this class, the skill level that they had, like, you know, they. To us, not to us, but you got the impression that Offaly didn't train hard, but they were much more skillful than everyone else. That was the impression. I'm not saying that that's the right way, but when you look back on it, like, John Try could be out of the game for a while, for example, right, John? But by jeez, there was no more skillful player in the game than John Try. All of a sudden, he'd whip on a ball on the ground that's in the back of the net, or he'd flick a ball into someone's hand. Do you know what I mean? The skill level was just phenomenal. Johnny Dooley was able to pop up. Wherever there was a ball, he was able to pop up. Lads were able to find Whelan. So Brian Light was just an exception. And then you look at the likes of Martin Hannamy. I mean, he was physically ferociously strong. You know, I never saw him, and he could have, and I could be wrong here, playing in any other position than number four. You know, yeah. And as I say, he could have. But by Jay, there was very few guys that ever got the better of Martin Hannamy. You know, so like down through the years, they had this and this just ferocious, whatever it is, attitude. Johnny Pilkington. I mean, Johnny, you know, Johnny was drinking and smoking. He always great for the crack. He was always one of the lads. When it came to it, then on the field, he'd run away from you. You know, he was strong. He was physical. He was fit. You know, he was fast. He'd pop up for the odd good score, but he'd prop up in seriously good positions. But like he was a serious performer, you know, and yet you got that different kind of impression. But I'd say awfully during the 90s, and now remember, I came up against Burr from a Kieran's College point of view, and like it was always nip and tuck between us. Like Borough beat us 1 year, we might win another year. And that was the same from juvenile the whole way up to senior. But the one thing they had was skill, just skill, skill, skill. And I'd say they had more skill. That team had more skill than anyone else in the country.
When you look back at their actual results, once there was a backdoor system, their performance in Leinster finals left a lot to be desired. 98, 99, 2000, they were on the receiving end of heavy enough beatings by Kilkenny. But somehow found that way back in 98, as you said. So a different mindset, certainly.
Yeah, but Offaly, and maybe this has not been kind to Offaly, but maybe Offaly should not have been in serious contention in 98 and 2000. You know, like Offaly were thereabouts in every year of the 90s. You know, with probably a similar team. Like there was very few changes to that team all along. Maybe only one or two all the way up along. You know, so like Offaly were doing terrifically well for, you know, the size of the county, for the amount of clubs that they had, for the amount of actually hurlers probably at that level that they had, particularly towards the end of the 90s. But still, they were able to produce it and produce it.
Certainly. The team in the millennium obviously was picked, and DJ Carey was admitted, and to huge kind of consternation again across the country. You know, Brian Whelan was obviously named it. He was a Corn player at the time. You were the other Corn player that almost everyone felt you should have been on it. How did you receive that?
Sure. Look, Brian, it's like everything else. if you're whether you're playing a match or you're looking to be selected as an all-star or on a team, whether you're waiting on Friday night at a team training session to see who you're playing, there might be no chance you're on it, but you're still hoping up to the last second until that team is named that you'll be named, you know. And if that was probably the way at the time as well, that, you know, of course, if you're in for something, even if you've no chance of being on it or there, you know, you want to be on it. And naturally, if you're not disappointed over something that you're passionate about, well, then you're not really that passionate about it, you know. But like you also have to accept that. I never put myself up on much of a pedestal. I played the game. I played it as good as I could. I enjoyed it. I got an awful lot out of it, you know, and whatever else comes from that is brilliant, you know. But when you're coming up against, I suppose, a team of the century or a team of the millennium, you're coming up against fair opposition, you know. Now, a lot of the people that, like, I have a granduncle on that. His name is Paddy Phelan. He played in the 30s. I think he won four All-Irelands between 1930 and 1940, around that time. Now, whoever picked that team needed to be 80 years of age to remember Paddy Phelan playing, not alone Lowry Marr playing. Do you know what I mean? So you're going back an awful long time when you're picking teams. And look, if you were to pick a current team, even if you were to pick your own county, the best 15 that ever played, it's a very, very difficult job when you actually knuckle down to it.
That is for sure. what would you consider as the one winner in your hurling career that would mean the most to you?
I'd say, well, if I was to just mention two, 92 All-Ireland was a big one, because Kenny hadn't won since 83. A lot of pressure on Inca Kenny at the time to try and get that All-Ireland. And that was my first one to win at senior level. And then in 1996, I captained my own club then to our first ever senior hurling title. So they were two that would be pretty memorable standout ones.
You know, beating Cork in that All-Ireland final in 92, you scored 1-4. Beating Cork did a big traditional, obviously, county alongside yourselves. It must have been special, that young player, but being mainly the star player as well.
Yeah, it was special. It was obviously a great occasion for us after. Again, one of those days, Brian, where we were against a Gael in the first half and just had to hang in, you know, and we scored a goal and 2 points in that first half, of which I scored myself, let's say. So we only scored a goal and 2 points in the whole of the first half. But Cork had missed 7 or 8 long distance frees because they had a Gael with them in that second half. So we actually only went in at half time. Instead of being 8 or 9 or 10 points down, we were only 2 points down, which gave us a huge momentum coming out in the second half. And obviously, we got a goal early on. John Power got through for a goal and he went to kick a ball. And, you know, it went the opposite direction than the way he was actually kicking it and went into the net. He sent Jared Cunningham the wrong way. And that gave us a great boost to the second half. So it was special. And Cork were favourites at the time, if I can remember. But it was one of those unusual games. It was, if it was ever a game of two halves, that one was certainly a game of two halves.
Did a young DJ Carey expect, you know, this was the first one in the bag? You know, I know you went on to win in 93 again, but, you know, was that par for the course for what you expected out of your Kenny career?
I'm not sure, Brandon. You have to go back a long way and it's hard to remember. But, like, that was our, it was our first All-Ireland, and as I said, we played in the previous All-Ireland final. But Kilkenny hadn't won an All-Ireland since 83, so that was 9 years. If you take that, I was 21 in 92, so I was 12 in 83, you know. So like, you were, I was only beginning to understand hurling in 83 as a 12-year-old. So I wasn't fully aware of the history of or where Kilkenny were. I mean, Tipperary and Cork were ahead of Kilkenny at the time in terms of All-Ireland victories. But certainly, you know, I knew it meant a fair bit to Kilkenny. But I suppose you can probably look back on it in your own time now. Maybe you were growing up in a great Offaly era. But at that time, you were only wanting to puck the ball against the wall, and you were only interested in your own under 12 game, the game you were playing, or under 14, or when training was, or you were hoping maybe training was every night of the week, you know, because you didn't get to too many. I didn't certainly get to too many Kilkenny games, maybe the odd one when it was on in Nolan Park, but we didn't really travel to Cork or Offaly or Wexford to see Kilkenny playing. So it was, you were involved maybe in your own little bubble rather than anything else growing up. But I suppose it became more apparent in 1991, 92, 93, what it really meant, you know. And I suppose All-Ireland finals are extra special because there's always a cohort of people follow your county everywhere, but it's when the bigger games come and the Leinster Championships and the All-Irelands come is when you really see the crowds. And then obviously winning All-Irelands, you have a homecoming parade, and you know, you see the massive joy that brings to people. It's special.
Speaking of special, obviously you referenced your club. You know, you won the intermediate in 92 and then you went on to win the senior, the big one, in 1996. Considering it was your first ever in the club, you know, extremely special times.
Yeah, it was. And you know, Charlie Carter and Pat O'Neill were also on the team, and we had one or two pretty decent guys as well along the way. So at that time, Brian, particularly in 96, like, there was, they said it was 15 to 20,000 people in Nolan Park for a county final, you know, and like, it was brilliant. You were on a crest of a wave at the time, and our first one, we we actually drew the first day against James Stevens and won in the replay. And there was as many people at the replay. So for a very small parish, we kind of gathered a huge amount of support from around the country as well, wherever we played at that time.
We used to go down to them actually as well.
There was lots of people from around. So there was great atmosphere at the games, you know, because as I say, there's probably 1,100 or 1,200 people in the parish of Gorn, where I'm from, but like with so many following it, and that gave great boost. And you know, even for fellas who it wasn't too bad for ourselves. We were playing at intercounty level. You were used to crowds, but some of our lads weren't used to crowds. I can remember one fella. I won't name him now because I might embarrass him. But he got a line ball. There was a line ball on his wing in the county final, and he didn't want to take it, and he called someone else to take it. And I remember talking to him that night after. I said, well, why didn't you hit that? That was, you know, creating an extra man back there. And he said, geez, he said, I was so nervous with the big crowd that I'd miss it. Said I didn't want to hit it. You know, so it was brilliant for the club. And we continued, even though we only won two county finals, we played in seven, kind of nearly, I won't say all in a row, but we played in seven. Now, two of them were replays. But between 96 and 2006, of which was a 3 or 4 year break when we didn't play, we were there or thereabouts almost every single year, and maybe in a semi-final beaten by a pint or getting to a final. We drew with O'Loughlin's another time, and then we beat Dunamagan in the county final. We lost to Dunamagan in the county final. So we were there or thereabouts for 7 or 8 years.
Did it ever occur to you that that crowd of 15,000 or 20,000, that the vast majority were coming to see you?
Well, Charlie was in. You know, we had a good team as well. Do you know what I mean? We were kind of new on the block. You know, so I never looked at it that way. Like, you'd always get the sense of atmosphere in the crowd if you got a goal or whatever it was. Do you know what I mean? But I never looked at it that way. I just looked at it that way. We were kind of a new team. We were playing, I won't say a different brand of hurling. It wasn't anyway different. It was, you know, stop scores going in and get scores at the other end. That was the way it was. But that group of players, like most parishes, that kind of group of players grew up along. We won under 12 titles, 14 titles, minor titles, under 21, intermediate. Took us four attempts to win an intermediate title, actually, and then within 4 years of that, we won a senior title. So we were kind of a team that was on the rise the whole way up along.
Who would you think is the best manager you ever played under?
Well, obviously the current man being Brian Cody, his record speaks for itself. But you know, I'd have to give a special mention to Ollie Welch as well. Ollie was a great man. Dermot Healy was the manager that brought me on, who was fantastic. Unfortunately, I only got to work under Dermot for a very short period of time. Ollie Walsh was a great man. But I suppose, it'd be very wrong if, you know, it'd be very strange or there'd be something wrong if Brian wasn't the man, because his record speaks for itself.
What was it about him that made it so special? Because in your time, obviously, you played in six All-Irelands and you won three.
Yeah, I suppose Brian, you know, the older players, and I probably put myself in that category now, but like what we wanted to do was we wanted to hurl in training. You know, like even modern day, and I'm a kind of a coach myself nowadays. 3/4 of a training session, or maybe even 100% of a training session, you don't even have a game in it now, you know. But back in our day, Jay, the last, you might have 20 minutes of a puck around, or, you know, four lads in a line and you're striking a few balls on the ground to each other and whatever else. And then you had 40 minutes of a hurling game. And that was fantastic. That was the highlight of the night. That was, you know, now lads hopped off one another. And definitely in my time under Brian, there was a huge amount of hurling. There was a huge amount of, like, it was, well, from his point of view, I think, well, I've got you at your best. In other words, you're senior hurlers now. there shouldn't be a whole lot of coaching needs to be done. Maybe a small bit of tactics, but there was a huge amount of hurling. But it was his determination, you know, it was that drive that he had. And like, I suppose he came in 99, we lost 99, we won in 2000, and we were beaten then in 2001 by Galway. Now, Galway on the day were physical, they were strong, they were, you know, they out-muscled us, they out. And I remember then in 2002, I remember when we came back, the speech he made was, that's never going to happen to a Kilkenny team under Brian Cody again. And it wasn't that Galway were dirty, it wasn't that there was anything overly bad. Like, there was always, in every game, you have your own lads who are pulled the odd one. Do you know what I mean? But it was their pure determination, their strength, their physicality that went after everything. And it was right after that that I suppose Brian became legendary after that, that he was never going to send out a team. I won't say we were unprepared, and that's why Galway beat us. But I remember on that occasion, Andy Comfort got a bit of a bang on the Tuesday night in a training session, and he was injured. And he was injured. But Andy tugged out and played on that day, you know. And there was other fellows with injuries, bits and pieces of needly injuries that actually played and probably shouldn't have played on that occasion, but they did because of their reputation maybe and who they were. And that was never going to happen again under Brian Cody.
In terms of making big decisions, that's one thing he was never afraid of. He did it even with you in 2004. He dropped you. I think it was down to you missing training due to playing a game of golf.
That's right. Yeah. I was playing in a pro-am, an Irish Open pro-am in the K Club, for something, and whatever way it was, rain delayed, and it was delayed, and so I didn't make training that night. But he didn't say a whole lot. I rang him to say I was under pressure along the way. He didn't say anything. But when the team was announced on Friday night, I wasn't on it, and I accepted that because, you know what, I was breaking actually my own kind of rules that I had for myself, and that was I was always you know, a serious man to train. I was always good to be on time, you know. I was probably one of the last to leave the field, you know, or I certainly didn't want anyone beating me in a sprint or in anything like that. So I was breaking my own, so that was fully accepted, and it happened, and he definitely wasn't afraid to make decisions. And I suppose that's what, it's a tough place. Being a manager is a tough place. It's much more tougher than being the physical trainer or being a selector. You know, your head is on the block, you know, and at the end of the day, if players are not going to fall into line with discipline, and like, obviously, things can happen, but I was doing something leisurely, you know, on that occasion. And really and truly, if I was the manager of the team, I wouldn't have been too happy with a player missing training for that reason as well.
Charlie was captain in 2003 and left the panel. And you went on to captain Kilkenny to win the All-Ireland in 2003. Huge, yeah. Personal honour.
Yeah.
Were things okay between you and Charlie?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, myself and Charlie grew up. We were in the same class together. We played together all the way up along on every team. And, you know, it was disappointing. I remember actually ringing him when he announced it to see if was he making the right, because I only heard it on the radio, and he felt he was doing the right thing, and you know, that fell then to myself as captain. But you know, at that time I felt you know, previous, obviously in Kilkenny it's the county champions where would have been captain, and I had my go as captain after the 96 county final, so I was captain in 97, so it was Charlie's turn. And you know, I look, it was personally, it was a brilliant honour to captain Kilkenny. I suppose it's the ultimate that anyone can have, is to captain their county to victory. And certainly if Charlie was the nominated and captain of that year, and if he had been around, he would have been the captain.
Actually, what do you make of that rule that Kilkenny still follow, and obviously Kerry too?
I think it's time for change, to be honest. I've said it a good few years ago, that that, you know, there's a lot of great leaders on teams that should be captains, and then, you know, you have situations now where fellas may not be good enough to make the team who are captains, and I think it should actually be left to the manager now.
In terms of regrets and your hurling career, what would you count as your biggest regret?
Sure, it's hard to know, I suppose, Brian. Probably the loss that hurts the most, in my opinion, would be 99 against Cork. As I say, we were 4 points up on that occasion, and Cork scored the remaining five scores to beat us by a point. So that would be huge. But, you know, I've always said it, that, again, I've played in 9 All-Ireland finals over an 18-year period. I wouldn't give up any of them, win, lose or draw. Like, it was huge. You played a game that you absolutely loved. You played it for the love of it, you know, absolutely for the love of it. There was no real gains out of it, although, you know, there was a bit of sponsorship later on and towards the end of my career and that. But it was the love of the game. So I played the game that I loved the most at the very highest level, and played in 9 national finals. And anyone in any sport, other than obviously the exceptional Kilkenny team that went out, you know, anyone that in any sport that can say that can really turn back and turn around and say, I've had a great career, not too many regrets.
The void after it was all over.
Massive. You know, it was a massive void. You know, again, I go back to my early times, and I can remember driving up the dual carriageway, driving to wherever we were, hotel-wise, before the game, and then driving in under the Hogan stand and parking your car outside the dressing room and going in and playing your match, and then obviously doing the reverse on the way home, to, in latter times, going on a bus, guard escort, up to games, you know, and then to actually being in your own car, driving to Clonliffe College and walking to games without the guard escort, having to go an hour or two earlier to try and get in with the traffic. You know, so that was one thing. That was something that I had to get used to very much, was the fact that I wasn't going from a team point of view. And then, obviously, you go to games, and I would like to think I'm mild-mannered enough at game. I like to think I look at a game and look at it reasonably, objectively, and then you have some lad beside you and he's roaring and shouting and talking about such a dirty belt and this is wrong and that's wrong, and you find yourself getting involved then with some guy, you know. So it's a totally different scenario, which on the field you've never heard any of that goes on. You're just yourself, and in actual fact, in Croke Park, you wouldn't even hear someone from 10 yards away shouting at you.
You didn't drink. Would that improve your hurling, or was it just you had no interest?
Well, some of my family, my uncle Martin, who started us off in hurling, he never drank. He was a big influence. My aunt Peggy, she won All-Ireland Camogie medals with Kenny. She didn't drink. My father and mother never drank. So they were huge influences on me growing up. And then it was always said, tell you how naive I suppose we were, if you wanted to be a better hurler, if you wanted to be fitter and all that, you didn't drink and didn't smoke. And that's, I didn't do that. And I found then, Brian, that as a young fella, the odd time I did go out to a pub and I wasn't drinking, you know, I used to get an awful lot of silly hassle at times, you know. So I decided I wanted to have a career, whether that was the right thing or the wrong thing. The one thing I wanted to do was really focus on my career as a hurler, and I give myself the very best chance that I could do, and that was didn't drink, didn't smoke, didn't really go out, you know, maybe it was silly, maybe I regret that to this day, maybe, but certainly I think for me that was the best, that they were the best decisions I made.
Apart from hurling then, and you've mentioned that, you know, you made decisions that were crucial to being the best you possibly could be in hurling. But yeah, what else do you have a passion for?
Well, I played a lot of handball when I was young. So I have a number of All-Irelands for handball. I have a couple of world handball titles and played a lot of handball with the great Duxy Walsh. I had a scholarship, or an offer of a scholarship, way back in my younger days, 1985, to go to Wake Forest University in America for handball. So that, I had a big passion for handball.
Were you tempted to go?
I was. But again, hurling was the big draw. So I wanted to be a hurler. It was as simple as that. And that's where I chose to be. Now, I think looking back on it, I would love to have gone to Wake Forest for the 4 or 5 years.
that would obviously had a huge different outlook on where your hurling would have went, but a different life experience. What got you into the handball in the first place?
A neighbour was way back in Gorsebridge. Gorsebridge was a neighbouring village, and they built a handball alley there around about 1978. So a year or so later, a neighbour of mine, Richie Bryan, had a son, James, and they were going and were invited to go play, myself and a brother, and that's where I started and played it right up to about 3 or 4 years ago. Now, there was a few breaks in between because I couldn't continue at a high level of senior handball when I was playing, when I was hurling. But I stopped playing it, or I haven't played for a few years. Doxie Walsh died about 3 years ago, and I haven't played since.
Yeah, and is the season at a different time from the hurling?
Well, you have two size courts in handball. One is a small court, 40 by 20, and that would go on maybe from January to March, which I was able to kind of combine. And then the big court, the 60 by 30, that went on over the summer, which I couldn't combine with the hurling. But what I found, Brian, was, you know, I could have been playing in an important match on a Saturday night, and that was before a hurling match on a Sunday. And if you're on a handball court for 2 hours and you're diving and that, and you're scraping elbows off the floor or knees off the floor, you know, you're not really up for it the following day to play a hurling match. So I really had to make a decision and stop playing handball for about 12 years.
Obviously, you're a noted golfer as well. Did it ever attempt you to play it even a little bit more?
No, I started golf when I was about 26. I probably played as much as I could, considering, you had to work and you had to do everything else and play hurling. So I played a fair bit of golf. I got to play a fair bit, you know, even all over the world, wherever I travelled, I used to bring the golf clubs everywhere. But in terms of being any better at it, I certainly wasn't at any sort of a level where I'd be able to compete at any good amateur or professional level or anything like that. It was a hobby, and you know, at times we all have good days and bad times, but certainly I wouldn't have been at a level of being able to take it any further.
Between your handball, your golfing, your hurling, your working, that doesn't leave much time for anything else, DJ.
I suppose the one thing I liked, Brian, and you know, even I had the Kilkenny minor footballers there for about 3 years. They weren't minor footballers for 3 years. We took them on when they were under 15 or 14, it was actually. So I just liked, you know, putting as much back into it as possible. So, yeah, there's a fair bit of time went on sport.
Do you have time for anything else outside of sport?
Very little, very little. There's a lot of time at the moment now, as everyone has time. And I tell you, you'd have a bit of, you know, itchy feet. All right, I can't wait to get something back on again.
Yeah, obviously you've referenced that you've run your own business down through the years, but did hurling have any influence on how you chose your career pathway?
Well, yeah, you know, it did, and it helped, I suppose. It helped in a lot of ways. I suppose I got caught in the downturn of 2008 and after that as well, but I can tell you what it did help, Brian, was when things were difficult, you always had a fallback, and that fallback for me was hurling, and not necessarily as a player the fallback, but certainly back into management or looking at games or going to games or coaching, you know, that sort of thing was a huge influence on me, and particularly then, as I say, when things weren't going overly well, because, you know, I had a sickness, an illness there for a period of time as well. And, you know, when you have something really to fall back on, you know, and something to motivate you, it certainly helps a huge amount.
I think it's only in times like that that you appreciate, you know, what you're doing and the reasons for that.
Yeah. And I often think, you know, and wonder, and it's not necessarily in sport, but like if you don't have an interest outside of your you know, work life, you've got to be missing out on a huge amount, because I can certainly see it from my point of view. And like when you travel around to games, you see an awful lot of the same people there and there. Like for us hurling, you know, for us hurling people, hurling takes up a huge amount of our life, but in a really good way, whether that's following your own kids or whether that's coaching a team or whether it's just following a team or whether it's just following the, you know, a team as a supporter. It takes up a huge amount of your life, but by and large, all for the good. And when your team has gone out of a championship or gone early, there's a massive void in there.
Obviously, you're 100% right, and GA takes up a huge amount of people's lives. Everywhere you go, you're synonymous with hurling and Kilkenny. Does it wear you out having to talk about it all the time?
No, it doesn't. Not so much. I always like to, but you know, on the other side of that, Brian, you know, it's always lovely and Kilkenny are admired. But you know, I often, I suppose, what annoys me a little bit is when you'd go to a place and you know. I was in a particular county 2 years ago at a game, and this guy, I was, you know, with my two lads, and we went in for a bit of grub into a hotel afterwards, and this guy started attacking me. I thought he was being funny, and you know, the particular county had beaten us, and he started talking about how dirty Kilkenny were and how influential they were on referees, and that was the only way they won so much. And I was, you know, kind of laughing, and you know, he kept digging to the point where it would. Which wouldn't be like me at all. I kind of nearly had to have a go back at him, you know. And you know that happens a little bit. And that's the annoying part. That's the not nice part of this. Because I know from my own personal point of view, I played in games and I got clocked and I got hit hard, and you got up and you got on with it, or you stay down, whatever it was. There's give and take in every game, but. The one thing I would never condone in any place, in sport in general, is dirt or dirty play or anything of that nature. And I would have thought from the game that I played, and we came up against Offaly and other counties, we went at it hell for leather and that was it. But I don't think there was ever a dirty stroke that I can ever remember in a game.
Yeah, and obviously you never received a yellow card, never booked down through the years. And as you said, you've been on the receiving end of strokes. What was in you that allowed you not to react?
I don't know. I always felt that kind of, you know, I always felt, and I was small as a young fella, growing up, Brian, and I Mr. O'Neill and Mr. Knox, but Dick O'Neill and John Knox were our primary school teachers, and they always used to say, the ball is your enemy, the ball is your enemy, the ball is your enemy, you know, not the man you're on, the ball is your enemy. And that kind of always stuck throughout my career. So I always felt if, you know, if I did get banged, particularly if it was maybe off the ball or wasn't particularly nice, I always felt if I could get one ball and hang it up, that would be much greater than pulling it back across a guy, you know. So that I always kind of had that kind of attitude. I never felt I was soft, you know what I mean? I never felt I went back from anything. I never felt I needed to go back after anything. What I needed to do was hang one up in the back of the net or put one over the bar or, you know, catch one out of the sky, whatever it was. That piece of advice that the ball was always my enemy, that kind of always stuck with me.
I'm going to have to press you now to one of the toughest questions we have in this. And I'm going to ask you to pick the best six players you've ever played with. And again, that's, as always, it's one from each line. So we'll start with your goalkeeper, DJ.
I'll clarify one thing, Brian, that you could go outside the realm here and say, if I picked all of who I played with, you know, because I played with Brian Whelan. You know, I played with Damien Fitzhenry. I played in Leinster club matches. But I decided what I'd do, since you asked me, this is what we're going to do. I'd stick with maybe Kilkenny players just on this occasion, because you could create a huge debate. But that's not saying that those guys were absolutely phenomenal, the fellas that I played with, maybe at Railway Cup. I'd go with James McGarry as a goalkeeper. James never won an All-Star. And I won't say he deserved one or didn't deserve one. He did possibly, but he was very solid, just solid guy. Just worked very hard at his game, and always made even hard saves look kind of easy, if that makes sense. You know, there was never a kind of a Brendan Cummins was a phenomenal keeper. Davy was phenomenal. Fitzhenry were phenomenal. But they were spectacular at the same time. You know, where James was just a phenomenal keeper, but never really overly spectacular. Just done things nice and solid. Now had probably a very good full back line as well in front of him, but just was a solid, solid keeper.
He had a huge knack of being under, again, position himself right. So that, as you said, it made saves look routine.
Yeah, I think one of the big advantages, James is a first cousin of mine, but James, we kind of grew up together. He was always an out-of-field player. And I think that always had an advantage as well, because, you know, as an out-of-field player, you have a half idea of where a guy is going to strike the ball.
Your full back line then?
My full back, I think I'd go, Willie O'Connor was a brilliant cornerback. Willie played in the 90s and 2000 and noughties, and Willie was brilliant. Just Tiger, you know, great man to train with, but just one of these guys always wanted to be out first, just had to be out first, out to the ball, had a great knack, had a great touch, brilliant first touch. And, you know, just Willie was about 5'7", 5'8", wasn't a big guy, but he used to have a 37-inch hurl. Don't know why, but he had a 37-inch hurl. Considering that guys at 6'1" and 6'2" now probably have 32- and 3-inch hurls.
Yeah. Was he a character?
Brilliant character. But a brilliant character, but one of these guys that when he talked and what he talked about, Willie was prepared to do. You know, so the action. And I think in that 2000 All-Ireland final, Willie broke two ribs. Well, the ribs were obviously broken after the game, but just before halftime, I think he got a shoulder or an elbow, just, you know, a collision. And he was in a bad way, a bad pain at halftime, and he was on the bed. And someone was called in, Sean Mealy was called in to the dressing room, and Brian Cody said, Sean, you're going on for Willie. And Willie was on the bed trying to get an injection, and he just perked up on the bed, and he said, under no effing circumstances am I coming off, he said. And he got up off the bed and ran straight out. So he was back on the field. there might have been half a needle still stuck in him or something, but he jumped up over the bed and no effing way am I coming off, he said, and off he went. And I think he was one of the best players on that occasion. So he was just one of these pure, he was a leader, just a pure leader.
Brilliant. On your halfback line, so?
Halfback line, JJ. You know, JJ Delaney, I think, had a brilliant, brilliant career. Some of these guys I played only 1 or 2 years with, but I was very lucky. Obviously, I was coming towards the end of my career. They were starting out in their career. But JJ was just brilliant. And then, obviously, went back to fullback as well. But I think I marked JJ in one of his first ever senior games, which was with his club. In a game with his club Johnstown, and he was just one of these exceptional players right from the beginning.
Oh yeah, that is for sure. And middle of the field,
well, you're probably wondering where I was fitting Tommy Walsh into, but Tommy played in the middle of the field. So Tommy would have to go. What can you say about Tommy? Just again, not a big guy, but seriously determined. Great hand, great skill. Just the passion for the game. He'd give a belt, he'd get on with it, he'd get a belt, he'd get on with it. And, you know, it's just his raw passion, but unbelievable player. I mean, an incredible guy in the air, you know. And one of my last games for my club, I played on Tommy. And Tommy kind of half retired me. I played well on him on the day, but I need to clarify this when I say I played well. I scored about 2-4 the same day, but I never moved from full forward. Tommy was gone for every ball. If it was at centre back, he was gone for a wing back, he was gone for it. He was just all over the place. He had a brilliant game himself, but I ended up being all on my own inside. And I just said to myself, you know what? I can't compete at the level that he's competing, and he's only starting with Kilkenny now. It's time for me to bow out.
Your half-forward line.
Half-forward, Henry. You know, again, brilliant. I was lucky enough. Henry came on the scene 1999, and I suppose I finished in 2000, so we had 5 or 6 years together on the team. Just a great bit of stuff. Just you know, great skill, but it was actually his work rate, as in, it was even his work rate on his own game was just phenomenal. Probably didn't have the greatest underage career, you know, but he was one of these fellas that worked at it and worked at it and worked at it. And maybe even later in his latter days as a Kilkenny player, suffered a good bit with injuries because of the amount of actual personal work outside of training, outside of the game, that he put into it himself. He suffered with cruciate knees, he suffered with ankles, with shins, you know, with all sorts of injuries in the end. But just a great guy, great player, and you know, it's no accident that he has won what he has won in the game.
It's no accident either that these are such household names when you're able to refer to them in their first name. JJ, Tommy, Henry, yourself, DJ. We've TJ at the moment, Shamey for Shamey Canlan.
Yeah.
You know, look, it speaks well in itself. But your team so far, James McGarry in the goal, Willie O'Connor, JJ Delaney, Tommy Walsh, Henry Shefflin, and who is going to make up your six?
I was very much torn between two players in a full forward line. The two players, Liam Fenley, I only played a couple of years with, and Eddie Brennan. And, you know, Liam was a phenomenal player, a great player and a great influence on myself. But I just probably would just tip it in favour of Eddie. I don't know why, but you know what? During this lockdown, I've seen an awful lot of hurling matches on YouTube over the last month or so. Particularly on Sundays, we could watch 5 or 6 matches on a Sunday. And Eddie Brennan just had a few incredible matches with Kilkenny. And maybe at times when Kilkenny just weren't, you know, they won All-Ireland's all right with him. But when they really needed him, Eddie popped up with a goal or two. And Eddie was 3 or 4 years on the Kilkenny panel with me without being able to break into the team. You know, Charlie was there. There was other fellas there. And once he broke in to the team, he just had a brilliant career. So I just give Eddie the nod over Liam Fenley. But that's speaking of Liam Fenley in a very high regard as well.
Fantastic team, DJ. Thank you so much. And thank you so much for your honesty throughout this interview. But before you go, we have a little quick fire round.
Okay.
Who is the best player in the game currently?
I think Seamus Callanan is the best player in the game at the moment.
What puts him ahead of everyone else?
I think his strength, his size, his ability, his teamwork, just able to pop up when, you know, when it's most needed for tip. So I think I would give the nod to Seamus.
Brilliant. Who is the best player you've ever played against?
Brian Whelan. Just one of those guys that wanted to get to the ball ahead of you. Just, he was, you know, he was, if he wasn't out front, he wanted to be out front. He had the speed to recover, but he, you know, he was able to go up the field and score a point. Now, at that time, points were a very rarity for wing backs, but he was able to pop over a point or two in a lot of games. So, and then obviously, the most annoying part is one day when he was sick in an All-Ireland final, he turned out, he went up the full forward and scored a goal in 6 points. But I'd say Brian would have to be one of those. Because I marked Brian a fair bit at underage level as well. He was a year younger than me, but we marked each other a fair bit at underage level.
You'd be glad to know he picked you as his best player ever played against too.
Mutual.
Respect, exactly. Is it a hurl or a hurley?
A hurl. For me,
hoops on your hurl or no hoops?
In latter years I kind of didn't have, but when I played, I always had one.
One or two?
One, but I always loved the pieced hurl, so obviously there'd be two.
Yeah.
But I'd never go for a pieced hurl by choice. If it broke, yes, but it wasn't the one I wanted to get as a new hurl, if that makes sense.
What colour grip did you use?
That varied. Didn't bother with it. Colours. I had no superstition.
Okay. Adidas World Cups or Puma Kings?
Puma Kings.
Sweepers or no sweeper?
No sweeper. I'm not a huge fan of the sweeper. I accept that it's in the game. I accept that it's very much part of the game going forward. But like, I suppose I played in the era of no sweeper, so it would be no sweeper for me. But I suppose going forward, coaching teams, you will have to coach teams to be able to play as a sweeper and against a sweeper.
O'Neill's, Slitters, or Cummins All-Stars?
Cummins All-Stars. I thought the Cummins All-Stars were just a lovely, lovely hurling ball. Very consistent. The rims weren't big, they weren't huge. He got a consistent strike out of him. And we just loved the Cummins All-Stars.
Last but not least, Crow Park or Thurles?
Crow Park or Thurles? Well, obviously the big occasions were in Crow Park, but I always loved going to Thurles. I thought Thurles was just, the atmosphere was just brilliant. It was, you know, I won't say it's a purely hurling pitch only, but it's known as a hurling pitch. And if I was to play in All-Ireland in Thurles, I'd definitely relish playing there.
Fantastic, DJ. Thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
You're very welcome, Brian.
Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoyed it. This podcast is sponsored by Golan Bake. And remember, Golan Bake is the home of the jambon, and you can buy their products in any supermarket to bake at home. If you haven't already, can you please subscribe to A Hurler's Life? We're on Twitter at A Hurler's Life, Instagram at A Hurler's Life, or you can email me at ahurlerslife@gmail.com.